Hello, this is Rumcast number 11 with Father David Nix and Andromeda. Andromeda, how are you?
Great. How are you today?
Doing well. So just a quick apology to everybody out there. The first half of this podcast, you're going to hear some weird noises of the microphone against my fleece. So sorry about that. We'll take care of it about halfway through this upcoming podcast. So on our Rumcast, you know, I was thinking, since I pray a lot for martyrdom, if I get my wish, can we have you and Oz take it over, and you guys can just call it like the Andy and Oz show?
I don't think so. You can't feel
it. Yeah, I didn't think you'd say yes to that. And you know, this is why I like our show, because there's a lot of Catholic shows that have good banter that's really funny for 30 minutes. And I don't think you and me and Oz like a ton of banter. And this is why for our listeners, we just jump right into our topics, because we know we're not as good as at funny banter as some of the other ones. So we're just going to jump right in. And Andromeda and I, we're going to do a two-part series called the Reclaiming Series. And here's the deal. I think there's a lot of Catholics out there who listen to us who think that saints like St. Thérèse of Lisieux and St. Francis of Assisi, they've been commandeered by people who don't take Catholicism too seriously. And I think we've sort of resigned some of these saints that maybe some traditionalists even think is lightweight kind of over to the left. And 2 weeks ago, Andromeda and I were talking just about how hard these days are for so many Catholics. And I think some of these Catholics have allowed the left to commandeer saints like Thérèse and St. Francis of Assisi. And I want to talk about why real Catholics, I don't even want to say traditional Catholics, because there's only one Catholicism that really explains reality. And I just want to talk about how real Catholicism, real Catholics out there have to reclaim Thérèse if we're going to get through these really, really hard days. And as most listeners out there know, St. Thérèse was a Carmelite saint who died in her early 20s, I think around 1903. And she actually claims to have found a new way to God. Now, most saints don't claim anything too novel because they understand, you know, humility is to trust the saints before them. So it was kind of jarring when people first read Thérèse because she's like, I found a new way to God. And most traditional Catholics don't like to hear of new ways. And then again, since she's been commandeered by kind of wimpy people on the left, we've sort of relegated her over there. And I think the message I want to give is just the Jumbotron view before we jump into this is not only are we going to reclaim Thérèse, but we really, really need Thérèse and her way of trust right now. So, you know, St. Thérèse talks about, speaking of trust, she talks about how she was too weak to go up the stairs of Jansenism. And Jansenism is kind of this basically pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps to heaven. And she needed an elevator, an escalator. I can't remember what the word was in French, but an elevator and an escalator had just been invented. And she actually describes how certain rich people's homes had this. And she said, she's too weak to walk up the stairs of working hard to be a Catholic, or at least extreme penances of the old school saints. And so she needed this elevator or this escalator. And she considered this to be a pathway of total trust in Jesus Christ, which she called confidence to the point of audacity. And not only is a translation from the French the same on that, but the transliteration from the French to the English is the exact same. Confidence to the point of audacity. Okay, so before I get into defending why Thérèse's way is so awesome, even for traditional Catholics, I want to say why many liberals have commandeered her in the church. One, there's this, I'm going to give you three reasons why the left has sort of commandeered Thérèse. One is, there's this idea that she couldn't do penance. Real quick counter to that, if you actually read the rule or the process of her canonization, one of the nuns was kind of caught by her warming her feet one winter by a little oven because it's cold in Carmel. They didn't have any central heating. And she said, Thérèse said something like, and I can't find a book that had the process of her canonization, but I read this in seminary. It kind of stuck in my mind enough to remember, not verbatim, but the basics. And Thérèse said something like, you know, this is our one job as Carmelites to save souls, and we got one chance on earth. So don't cheat. Let's offer this up, you know. So she was actually very, very good at penance. This isn't a podcast to explain how great she was at penance, but we're just going to explain how she got to that point. It wasn't by pulling herself up by her own bootstraps. It was total trust in Jesus Christ to the point of audacity. Okay, number two of kind of why Thérèse has been commandeered by progressive Catholics, it's sort of this idea of an attraction to Protestantism. There's sort of this idea, well, we don't have to do anything to be saved because Jesus just loves us so much. We're going to see the great trust that she had in Christ is precisely why she loved him back so much. She said it's trust and nothing but trust that will lead us to love. It's trust and nothing but trust that will lead us to love. And again, many of us Catholics, we sort of let words like love just be commandeered by the left. But remember, heaven, well, here on earth, there's three theological virtues, faith, hope, and charity. Our level of holiness is measured by the level of faith, hope, and charity we have. Once we reach heaven, please God, faith and hope are like the two boosters on a rocket that fall off in whatever, the ionosphere, or wherever we, you know, before we get up to space. And then the only thing functioning there is charity. So charity is everything that we're going to have in heaven and the beatific vision. And then the third thing, the third way that by a lot of kind of liberals commandeer Therese is they really like this idea of something new. And progressive Catholics like everything to be novel, everything rejecting the past, and everything else. So was Therese's way of trust new? Yes, this is the one point of the three I'm actually going to give the liberals. But here's the thing. I'm actually going to propose in this podcast, it wasn't God's nature who changed. It wasn't even human nature who changed. What changed in the 20th century was the diabolical disorientation that Our Lady of Fatima said would actually come upon the church. So here's my proposal for all of our listeners today. You have to reclaim Therese in these days of doctrinal confusion, in these days when we're embarrassed to be raising families as Catholics, when even Catholics think you're crazy if you're not going to some LGBT parade or participating in Protestant worship services. Or I mean, there's a thousand things. And I think we've let the left take over people like St. Therese and St. Francis of Assisi. But there's actually nothing new in human nature, nothing new in God's divine revelation. But here's why we need Therese so much is because there's so much diabolical disorientation, we actually can't fight this battle by lifting ourselves up by our own bootstraps. In fact, the darkness around us is such a spiritual battle. I'm going to propose this. Only the way of Therese is actually going to get us there, because only God and Our Lady can beat the demons that are crawling around. Are there more demons on earth than before? Yes. I think you guys have heard me talk about Gloria Polo, how every abortion opens new seals in hell that should have kept back numerous demons. So we have more demons on the planet than ever before. St. Francis of Assisi, in his great prophecy of this one time that would come, said demons would have extraordinary power. I'm going to propose that because we are so surrounded in the 20th century by demons, we can't take an old school way of fighting them on our own. I mean, ultimately, all the saints got their power from God and trust in God. But I believe so many of us Catholics, I talk to so many good Catholics who just feel they can't go on another day. They feel so oppressed by not only the culture, they feel like spiritual oppression. They feel that they fall into, many great Catholics fall into mortal sin a lot than probably the early church of people who took the faith as seriously. And part of that is because we're just so surrounded by temptation and diabolical disorientation. And so my proposal to our listeners today is this, that we can't fight like the saints of old. Only God can win this. And this is why we have to be raised up in the arms of Jesus for him to totally fight our battles. And, you know, when Andromeda and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, Andromeda pointed out that the early Christians were given intense internal consolation as they approached their tortures, say, in the Roman Empire. And many of us today may be given no internal consolation, even if we're praying an hour or two a day. And part of this is this confusion, hierarchy disagreeing on basic dogmas, just like Our Lady of Akita said, bishop would fight against bishop. But this confusion, here's what's so beautiful about this. Many of the saints actually have to foot the bill of the people around them in suffering and the people who come after them. Saint Therese, even though she suffered at the end by asphyxiating to death and her lungs filling and suffered in the cold, because she really hated the cold, most of her suffering was actually psychological, that she felt heaven was closed to her. And I think many good Catholics, and even some of my listeners, even though they say their rosaries and they're praying, they feel a despondency, like heaven's kind of closed to them. And what's so beautiful about Therese, she foot the bill before you and I did. She wrote in her diary, she felt heaven was close to her. And yet, here's what's so powerful. She kept making acts of faith. She kept making acts of trust. She kept making acts of hope. She kept making acts of charity. And this is why Therese is not the model for the loosey-goosey Catholics out there. Therese is the example for the great Catholics out there, because trust is really going to be our only way to charity. I have like two more things to say about Therese. Is there anything you want to jump in there with, Andromeda? Because I'm just going at 50 miles an hour here.
I think that was really great. In fact, from our initial conversation, you developed a more powerful narrative around why we need Therese, which I didn't catch during our conversation and totally agree with. I think the reason why I've never been able to connect with either Therese or Francis in a more meaningful way, I look to other saints, is because the parts of their personalities that were emphasized most by, you know, kind of charismatic Catholics maybe narrowed their personalities down to being unrelatable, you know, just simpletons who had the, you know, they played with birds or flowers and, you know, unrelatable to a person like myself. Learning, as I've learned more about their actual personalities, the fullness of their personalities.
Yeah.
Yes. When I was in religious life, I found that the consolations that I thought I would find in a more traditional community, which had all the liturgical, I guess, grandeur that I was hoping for, the divine office, the traditional Latin mass. I also found that, you know, that wasn't enough. Not that it wasn't enough for me, but that wasn't enough to hold the continuity of the faith together, because these communities were trying to and were working as they were going to try to reclaim or restore or rediscover really elements of what traditional communities were. And because there is no hermeneutic of continuity, because there was a rupture, they're recreating them sometimes in very kind of malformed ways or ways that and become so austere and so violent to the human person in like denying human nature entirely or just holding, you know, so strongly to one particular practice or another in the mass or in the office, later finding out that, you know, well, that wasn't right. And then you have all these factions building between people in those communities. My point, though, isn't really about religious life, but it's about, you know, that there's so little to hang on to as Catholics in our age.
Yes.
Doctrines slipping through our fingers. We look to our heroes, you know, that are living, and we find they're not heroes. We run to the Latin Mass communities and hope for orthodoxy, and you know it's blended with some heresies, and and so we find ourselves in a situation where holding on to faith is very difficult. It's not only difficult, but it often provides no consolation, and we're blind. We're just kind of feeling around, hoping, you know, to find a leader, not finding one. And it creates a lot of discouragement, I think, in even your best Catholics, even those who are living every day, praying as they ought, doing all the things they would like to do, and then still at the other end of it, finding themselves in a place of discouragement. And that's discouraging in itself.
Yeah. Therese said she felt heaven was closed to her. And, so it's a lot like what you just described there.
Yeah, it makes her very relatable to know that about her as opposed to just, you know, some of the, you know, cuter, triter things about her spirituality. But to know that she went through that darkness makes her writing or the more uplifting things that she says very relatable, because to be uplifted – to be that innocent, to be so trusting in the midst, knowing she had no consolations, mm-hmm. encourages you to keep going, to take that next step.
Yeah. You know, there was a, it was about 100 years ago. Actually, it was only about 80 years ago in Iowa. There was a really serious case of an exorcism, and they had like two priests there and nuns and lay people on the team praying, and everyone's getting exhausted. And they called on Therese, and there was just a, I don't know if there was a shower of physical roses, but there was a smell of roses. And this person who was fully possessed was just liberated. And it was just like this celebration. I think it was in Iowa 60 or 70 years ago. And I love how you just use the term cute for Therese, because that's exactly how people think of her. She's just this cute saint. Like, if you want to get serious about like spirituality, you follow Pio, Padre Pio. But if you need something cute, she's the kind of like the cat on the table or something. But no. Like, numerous popes, even pre-Vatican II popes, said she is the greatest of all saints. One of the, I think it was Pius the 10th or 12th, one of them said he loves Teresa of Avila, but it is Therese that gets us safely to shore. And again, numerous popes say that it is her way we need. She is the greatest of the modern saints. Her showing up at exorcism shows she's not small ball. She's not small ball cute. It is her way that is going to defeat the demons, actually. So, you're exactly right. We got to get out of this. We have to get out of our idea that you know, Therese is the cute saint and Padre Pio is the tough guy saint or something, you know?
Yeah, at least remember that she had a real, you know, spiritual fortitude through what would have devastated, I think, even the best Catholics in our time, you know, to be in a state where your faith is so interiorly challenged that you can't experience, you know, God in a way that you can hang on to is very much like what we're going through now in the church, you know, at large.
That's right. That's right. No, I think that's good. And my favorite line from all of Therese comes from her autobiography. And she says, quote, "Jesus does not ask for glorious deeds. He asks only for self-surrender and gratitude," close quote. And I think that's exactly what traditional Catholics need right now. At least I'll speak for myself. That's what I need, because I feel like, oh, all this stuff is so basic we could correct in the media. This is like really basic doctrines constantly being denied by important people. And I'm not saying we become lazy about that, but should I lose my soul in getting flustered and correcting it? No. And that's where Christ really wants me as a priest to get to heaven, and you as a single woman to get to heaven, and the families out there listening to get to heaven. And again, he only asks for self-surrender and gratitude. And ironically, here's what's so interesting about that. Because Therese says it's trust and nothing but trust that leads us to love, I actually think this is tied to St. Louis de Montfort and his teaching on the apostles of the last days. And I might write a blog post about this, but this is the basics of how this goes on Therese's. I think that some of the early Jewish converts to Christianity would have converted because they saw Christ fulfilled the Hebrew scriptures. And here's what I think of about a lot of modern Catholics, and not modernist Catholics, but good Catholics today. I think that the really good Catholics are actually really paying attention to Marian apparitions. And these Marian apparitions explain the apostasy in the Catholic Church. Fatima talks about how there would be an apostasy from the top down. Thus, here's my big conclusion on this. Only trust in God is going to get us through this. Who teaches this trust in God? Well, every saint, but to a new degree, this trust is St. Therese. And St. Therese said that she would have no less trust in God if she had committed all the mortal sins of the world. And even her nuns thought, okay, you've never committed a mortal sin. You're just exaggerating. Give me a break. She said that on her deathbed. And she corrected them. She's like, no, I really mean it. Like, I would have no less trust in God if I had committed all the mortal sins in the world. And I think this prepared even the best Catholics for basically the current world we live in, this hierarchical apostasy and ubiquitous immodesty. And, you know, recourse for relief from mortal sin to God's mercy in the confessional seems nowadays to be necessary even for the best of Catholics, really unlike any time in history. I mean, it seems to me that it used to be that you know, bad Catholics fell into mortal sin and good Catholics remained in grace their whole lives. When now good Catholics, and no sarcasm here, now good Catholics fall into mortal sin frequently and bad Catholics think their mortal sins are venial or just not sins at all, you know? And just one last theological thing on this whole thing of Therese is the big debate on how hard we work to get to heaven is between the two extremes of Pelagianism and Quietism. Pelagianism, it doesn't just mean you work hard to get to heaven. You think that God is, you know, wants to see you like that waiting for Guffman, working, never stopping, always working, that Christopher Guest movie. That's Pelagianism. We have to pull ourselves up to heaven by our own bootstraps. But there's also a very nefarious side to Pelagianism and liberalism nowadays, which is basically as long as you're a good person, you're going to heaven. You don't need any supernatural grace. Basically, all good people go to heaven. So the really funny thing is there's a certain person in the Vatican who often calls traditional Catholics Pelagians. The funny thing is his soteriology is the study of salvation, is that anyone who's a decent person goes to heaven, apparently except traditional Catholics. But the teaching on that is actually Pelagianism. That's what's so ironic about him calling traditional Catholics Pelagian is it's actually Pelagianism to believe that as long as you're a decent person, you go to heaven. Well, no. St. Thomas Aquinas is so clear. Heaven is a supernatural goal. Heaven is a supernatural goal. No amount of natural goodness in a person's heart can get them there, even good deeds. We need the supernatural grace of baptism and confession to get there, to get up there, to reach that high. Think escalator. Think elevator, that only by God's grace can we actually do this. This is where Therese really shoots out of the water the Pelagianism of the liberals today, that no, only by grace can we get there. I can only get to the supernatural goal of heaven through supernatural grace, not working in a soup kitchen the rest of my life. Now, for salvation to be realized, we have to cooperate, and how we treat the poor is a huge part of that. Read Matthew 25. So, as I've said before on podcasts or in blogs, salvation is a free gift given through baptism, but we will be judged on how we treated the unborn, the poor, everybody else who's named in Matthew 25, the naked, those in prison. On the other side of the coin is quietism. Quietism is just Jesus did everything, and I can just sit around for the rest of my life. And this kind of came into, I think, some French communities in the 17th or 18th century. Therese is sometimes conflated as quietist because she's all about trust in God. But what's so amazing is if you really look at her life, nobody wrote more letters outside of the monastery than her. Nobody took care of the nuns like her. Like nobody really was as active as her. And again, it wasn't her earning a way to heaven. It's just her heart was so inflamed with love of God, she couldn't help but overflow. But again, how did she get to love with trust? So here's the chronological order to get to where we need to. Trust leads to charity, leads to cooperation with salvation that is free through baptism and confession, leads to the beatific vision, which is pure charity. And because the Catholics who listen to this are mostly believers in the supernatural life of grace, I really think we need to reclaim St. Therese. Last story on this. When I had a Navy SEAL speak to my youth group at one point, he was talking about who makes it through BUDS training. Everybody knows BUDS training is the hardest training on the planet. And only the uncommon of the uncommon of the uncommon even make it there. And then the uncommon of them actually make it through BUDS. And after he gave a talk to the youth group, I asked him, so psychologically, who really makes it through BUDS training? And he didn't have a good answer at first. And then I pushed him a little harder. And my friend said something really interesting. He said, it's the men who prove they can do the task at hand. Let that word go into your mind. The men that can do the task at hand. And then he said something really astonishing to me after this. This was a captain of one of the Navy SEAL teams. He said, and isn't that exactly what Therese taught? I thought, wow, of all the different saints a Navy SEAL would point to, you'd think it'd be St. Alphonsus Liguori or one of the big-time saints. And I like Liguori. But it's interesting he said Therese. And that's because Therese, if you look at how she lived in the Carmelite monastery, she just did the task at hand. She didn't think she had to save the church. She didn't think she had to save, you know, all these other things. And I'm preaching mainly to myself here because my listeners know I get flustered about all these things. So it's not me, you know, preaching anybody but me. just to take care of the task at hand. And so I really think that with all these things going on around us, families falling apart, the church at the human level, never the divine level, the church falling apart, what is the way to God? It's trust, and it's taking care of just the task at hand. So I think, just to sum it up, I think Therese is the saint for the Catholics who actually do want to take Catholicism seriously. She's not the saint for the loosey-goosey people who don't even think we need grace to get to heaven, that anybody of any faith who works in a soup kitchen is going to make it to heaven. No, she's actually all about grace. She's all about trust. And in these days that could be the last days, the days of the, you know, the last apostles of St. Louis de Montfort, when we may not have the consolation flowing into our hearts that the early Christians did before they were tortured. And I'm not saying that their nerves are dulled in the early church when they were tortured, but they had an overflowing amount of consolation. Therese had to foot the bill for temptations against faith. And I know my listeners have temptations against faith. And just remember what Cardinal Newman said, 1,000 difficulties does not equal one doubt. We have all these difficulties, but ultimately we really do trust in Jesus Christ. That's not a Protestant thing. It's not a loosey-goosey Catholic thing. It's so central to everything we want to accomplish as good Catholics. Because what did Jesus say? If you love me, you will keep my commandments. What did Therese say? It's trust in nothing but trust that will lead us to love. Trust leads to love, and love leads to keeping the commandments.
Amen.
Amen. Okay, you got anything? Sorry, just speaking of commandeering, I commandeered this whole podcast. Do you have anything else on that before I jump into St. Maximus on Our Lady?
Well, just one comment on Our Lady of Fatima. Mm-hmm. I think that apparition, for me, speaks with such precision to the current age of the church that it's become impossible for me to not be consoled by that apparition, because every time I look at the headlines, every time I see something said about the future state of the church, its direction, I can get easily discouraged, but then immediately I'm reminded of even some of, you know, Sister Lucia's, comments, analysis of the apparition while she was still alive post-Vatican II years. And, you know, it really, really, Our Lady came and told us this was going to happen.
Yes.
So we know we can trust in God. God's, knew this from all time and eternity. So, very consoled, very consoling.
Yeah. And I think it's consoling, not only the fact that heaven didn't leave us abandoned, heaven warned us there would be a general apostasy from the top down. That's consoling, but there's a second reason it's psychologically consoling. It's sort of like if you struggled with back pain for 5 or 10 years and then you finally get a diagnosis. It's like,
if it's
the worst diagnosis, you're just like, finally, like,
I know,
it's back cancer. Oh, well, fine. Okay. Now we know, how to tackle that. If it's, chemo or naturopathic medicine or, there's a relief in knowing the diagnosis, even if you don't have the prognosis.
Yes,
or the
anybody who's been sick and has gone through the process of not being able to find what the illness is knows that when they do, it's such a relief, even as you said, if it's a, terminal prognosis.
Yeah. And in a certain sense, the church is walking in a dark night of faith. I mean, there's some Carmelite experts that say, St. John of the Cross went through the dark night of the soul. And some people actually say Therese actually went through something darker than the dark night of the soul. She went through the dark night of faith. And it's interesting, if our church is going through the dark night of faith, she kind of had to foot the bill. Now, the difference is she wasn't a heretic and she didn't choose that darkness, where there's a lot of people who are choosing the darkness. But it's a temptation for us who are trying to be good Catholics to follow certain people into the darkness. And this is where Therese had to foot the bill for us first in this, dark night of faith, that she walked it first and she still made these acts of trust. So I think it's just an additional reason why we should look to Therese's way of the escalator of trust, of confidence to the point of audacity, when everything is falling down around us. And, just a little insight into when Andromeda and I speak on the phone, I keep thinking we're just this nosedive airplane's going to just pull up. And Andromeda is very much a realist, and she just always says to me, nope, it's going to get worse before it gets better. It's going to get worse before it gets better, as far as like the Amazon Synod. I mean, I just keep thinking, okay, the Amazon Synod's going to get canned and everything's going to get figured out. And then yesterday, Andromeda texted me the plan for the Amazon Synod. And it, I mean, it looks like it was written by Unitarians getting together with Lutherans, you know? So we have to be ready to make these acts of trust as it appears the human, never the divine element of the church, but the human element of the church is taking a nosedive.
That's right. That's right. You convinced me on Therese for sure.
And you convinced me things are going to get worse. But again, there's hope in that, because it's, again, if a doctor comes in and says, yeah, you got back pain 5 out of 10 now, it's going to get to 8 out of 10 before we actually get your dissecting aortic aneurysm fixed. Then you're like, okay, I think I can muscle through this if it's going to get to an 8 before you can actually cut me open and fix this aneurysm. You know, like when we have an understanding, it actually kind of makes trust a little bit easier. So even that, I feel, when you're a doomsday prophet, even worse than me, I find hope behind that, actually, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, by no means will Christ's second coming come until the great apostasy happens. So right. He said, let no one fool you about this.
Yeah. And the fact is, even people like St. Robert Bellarmine, who lived long before Therese, talk about the final age of the church being not physical suffering, but spiritual suffering against the church. So again, how interesting that Therese, she did endure some physical suffering, especially the tuberculosis that took her at the end, some of the cold that she had in cold winters in Carmel. But the main suffering was spiritual and psychological. And I think, again, that's what we as, I don't say good Catholics, but at least Catholics trying to be good, have to really muscle through is temptations against the faith, because there's such a spiritual attack. It's not the Roman Empire attacking us. There's a spiritual attack around us to be tempted to walk into this dark night of faith. And Therese is like, hey, on the other side, it's pure light. Just keep going. Just keep going, everybody. Keep going into the escalator of the arms of Jesus. That's not a liberal thing. That's not a Protestant thing. It's our only chance out of the demons attacking us now. Trust in Jesus. Trust in Jesus. Trust in Jesus. Trust in Our Lady. They have this. The triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary is coming. I don't know when. I don't know how. But we know it's coming. Here's St. Maximus the Confessor on Joseph right before the Nativity. The angel called his betrothed wife, but she had not been given to him as a wife in the manner of other women, by no means. Rather, she had been betrothed to his custody as a divine treasure consecrated to the Lord. Do not fear that she remain in your house, for the one who will be born from her is of the Holy Spirit, and she will bear a son, and you will call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. With these words, the angel dispelled the fear that was frightening Joseph, and he introduced another much greater fear, so that he would fear and respect the Holy Virgin even more as one filled with the Holy Spirit and as the parent according to the flesh of the ineffable and unapproachable Son, who was born before the ages and who will save his people from their sins. For that is why he descended from heaven to earth, the beneficent King, in order to save us, those glorifying and believing in him from servitude to sin and from the tyranny of the evil demons. Thanks for joining us on Romecast number 11. God bless you.